I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of the Proper Class Podcast. I'm Laura Checkley.
And I'm Hannah Chiswick.
And we are, of course, here to celebrate all things working class, because if we don't, who the bloody hell will? Hey, Phil, go on, get out of my pub. That is just a little clue, listener, as to who we might have on this week.
Like a little clue. You're subtle. As always, we sit down with a working class hero to celebrate their life and achievements and discuss just how they got to where they are today. Oh, I sound like I've had 50 cigarettes. So on that note, who are we celebrating this week, Law?
Do you know what? I'm really excited today because I get to interview one of my oldest muckers. And more importantly, they get to meet you, Hannah, the oldest of all my oldest muckers, which I'm, of course, thrilled about. Actually, can you imagine if the two of you didn't get on and I had to like choose between the two of you?
Right.
Who would I choose? Well, I'd choose this week's guest listeners because they are a multi-talented stage and screen actress and have been gracing our screens for nearly 20 years now. That's going to make her feel really old.
You may know this week's guest from TV shows such as The Bill, Casualty, Murder Mysteries, Edge of Heaven and Young, High and Dead, to name but a few. She's also made it onto the big screen too in films The Knot, Fractured, Payback Season and American Pie presents The Book of Love. But no doubt you will know her best for playing long-standing popular character Ruby in BBC's EastEnders, which saw her nominated multiple times for Best Female Actress.
She is also a super talented stage actress too, not only appearing in straight plays like The Golf, A Midsummer Night's Dream and Much Ado About Nothing, she's also starred in the odd musicals such as Boogie Nights and Grease, playing the iconic role of Rizzo, which I actually saw. And let me tell you, Hannah, my girl, she got some pipes. Girl can sing.
Rizzo is literally the best part in musical theatre history as well. And dance too, it seems, because in 2006 she reached the finals of Strictly Come Dancing, which took her on a UK tour with the show. A small fact for you, listener, she's the youngest ever competitor to appear on the show.
She is. Listen, I know she's my mate, but she really is a wonderful talent. And even after finding fame at such a young age, I can honestly say I've never met anyone as hungry, hardworking and as humble as she is. I guess it might be a working class route, say. Well, let's find out. So listeners, please give a very warm Proper Class Podcast welcome to the one-time winner of the Sexiest Female Award at the Soap Awards. It's Louisa Litton!
Hi!
Hi, babe!
Oh, I wish you were my agents. I'd be getting loads of work.
I think we might start doing this as a job, like writing people's intros and like, do you know what I mean? I think it's quite a good...
The way you sold me up then, I was like, oh, God, yeah, I did do that.
Just like have us wander in the room before your audition and do that and then go, and Louisa Litton, here she comes.
That'd be amazing.
Maybe drop the FHM bit. But yeah, that'd be great.
I was actually thinking, so that was the FHM award, was it, Sexy Female?
Oh, no, that wasn't actually. God, I've just put myself right in it. That was for, one of the British Soap Awards, I think it was.
They do a sexiest female category.
They did. They're not allowed to do it now. No. They did.
Not so much now.
Like, I was just thinking, as I said that, were you young? Yeah, were you like 16?
Yeah, I was 16.
Oh,
I really wish I'd take it out.
Oh, no, I feel like take this out.
It was quite a story. My dad came with me to the awards. Like, it was, you know, my first ever soap awards. And so my dad came with me. basically, because I needed a chaperone. That's how young I was. And we all knew I was nominated. And like within the family, it was a bit of a joke, to be honest. Like, oh yeah, you're up against, I was up against at the time, like Roxanne Pallett and, you know, like the sexy soap stars of that time. And I won. And I will never forget looking up, because we were sat like down the front rows, looking back and seeing my dad's face. He was like
horrified.
He was traumatized. He was horrified.
It's like so baby mad, girl. Isn't it? Like, you're nominated, yeah. You're so young, and it's like sexualizing so women. Oh my God, that would just never happen now, would it?
I loved it at the time because I was so young and I was like, why?
Yeah, sure, why
but
not?
Now looking back, it's
wrong on so many odd levels.
But it's gone now. Right. The whole awards has gone, it's gone altogether.
It does show you though, doesn't it, in a short amount of time, like how that just seems so wildly inappropriate to us now. Like, I don't think anyone would think that was appropriate now. And that's only a short amount of time that that's really like, tastes have changed to that level of going, oh dear, no, a 16-year-old young woman, like that's just so, the whole category is wrong, isn't it? But,
Anyway.
It's the only soap award I won, so let me have it.
You keep it.
So Lulu, sorry listeners, I call her Lulu. Lulu, we start the show each week asking our guests to take us back to a time and a place that reminds them of their working class roots. So if you could take me and Hannah anywhere and our listeners today, where would that be?
I think it's quite a general place, but probably back to my estate that I grew up on. It would have to be there. I mean, there's loads of spots within that estate that I used to hang around in that I could specifically take you back to. But I loved it. I loved it so much.
Where
was it? It was actually off of Gray's Inn Road. So no one really knows it's there. So I used to say, oh, yeah, I live in Holborn. And people go, oh, God. But it was actually at the council estate round the back.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I loved it so much. And there was like a small group of us, like kids that, you know, grew up together, and we played run outs and knocked down ginger. And, you know, we basically just hung out on the estate. Like I would never let my baby do that now. But back then it was safe and it was the thing to do.
Did you ever play curbs?
What's that?
Did you play curbs?
Probably
Hannah?
Called it something different.
So like
someone else was talking about this, weren't they? But I don't know what curbs is.
So both of you stand either side of the road on a curb, and you throw the ball and you try and hit their curb so it bounces back.
Oh,
and then you go in the middle and you do a bit of
We had like a football pitch, but it had like a ramp, like a viewing platform and a ramp. It's actually quite good. We used to go to the market, so we were right off of Level Lane Market, and get all the fruit crates. And we would literally race down the ramp, sat in
the slide down,
like literally in any weather, come rain, shine, snow.
Yeah.
And I was petrified of it, but I had to do it to like show off to the boys. I would just take you back there. I loved it.
Why? Then. Why would you take us there?
I feel like when I was younger, I almost lived a bit of a double life. I went to Sylvia Young Theatre school. So I'd go to school and I'd be in my like poppy red jumper and my hair in plaits, and then I'd come home, eat my dinner and get changed as quickly as I could and like get out with my friends like in the estate. It was just simple back then. You know, we literally used to sit in a stairwell and just talk. None of us really had any phones or, you know, nothing that they have today. And we would just sit and chat and laugh and I just loved it. I just couldn't wait to play out, as you call it. And hang out there as well, like the older I got.
And did those mates in your estate, did they know that you were at a stage school? Like,
yeah.
And what did they think of it? Like, did they think it was a bit posh?
Yeah, they did. They did think it was a bit posh. And to be honest, I didn't really show any interest in it because I don't, like, as a kid, it's just a school's a school. So to them, I was just at school probably like anybody else was at school. It was more my school friends that were fascinated with the fact that I lived in an estate and what's it like. I think they thought there was loads of like violence there and crime and,
ultimately at stage schools, there's a lot of, you know, kids that have got money, aren't they? Because, you know, most of the time you have to pay that. How did your parents afford that?
Question. They had a lot. Well, to be honest, they worked their absolute like backsides off to get me through it. I originally auditioned for a scholarship and didn't get one. But they offered me a place there anyway. And they just worked as hard as they could to get me through. And we had a lot of help from family. So like my grandparents would sort of help out as and when they could. Yeah, and I guess it was their sole focus was to get me through that school. And honestly, I don't know how they did it.
And then I guess you must have got work along the way, and that would have helped as well, wouldn't it? Because I know a lot of kids that went to stage school, their parents would end up, if the kids worked, they'd just end up using that money that they'd earned to pay back the fees and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course. And that's why for me, like getting EastEnders at 15 while still there, it just felt like it was worth it.
Yeah.
For me, I was like, I know they've put me through this and they've really worked hard. And, you know, we probably missed out on holidays and things like that. But once I landed that job, I could almost pay them back. I mean, I didn't at 15, but, you know, within my life now, I've managed to sort of give back because, you know, they got me through that school, and look what I've ended up to do.
How did you start performing at all? Like, were you just going to like dance classes, local dance classes, or did you, how did that even start before you got to Sylvia's?
Yeah, so I'm an only child. So growing up, I think my mum and dad sent me to exactly that, dance classes on a Saturday, just to, you know, get me around other kids, to start building up my confidence as a person. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I auditioned for, Sylvia Young and Italia Conti, because that was near to where we used to live.
And did you know about those places because the dance school presumably told you, you should try here, or is that how you knew about it?
Yeah. Eventually I did classes at Italia Conti on a Saturday as a kid. Right. And it sort of, it come from there. But it's so strange because no one in my family's in the industry. Like there's no background of it. There's no, you know, experience of it. And I guess they just sort of, I don't know, they just went along with the ride. And then I got the place at the school, and then it was a bit of a moment of, well, we've got to get through this now, you know.
Did you feel like, I know like a lot of my friends that, you know, their parents got them through drama school because they weren't fortunate enough to get a scholarship, but they like, I've got friends of their parents like remortgaged their houses, like sold everything just for their kids to go, or their kid to go to drama school, performing arts school. Did you feel that, like you were saying, when you got EastEnders, you were really relieved? Have you felt that responsibility to go, I must keep going and be successful in this industry, because they sacrificed so much at the time?
Yeah, to be honest, I was never, ever made to feel that way at the time. There was never a moment at the time that I even knew that they were, that it was, you know, how can I put this? I appreciated that it was obviously a big deal for me to go to that school, but I was never made aware, to be honest, of how they actually did it.
Yeah, of course.
They sort of, you know, they just wanted me to enjoy myself. And it's school. You still got to, you know, they still wanted me to concentrate on my education and all the rest of it. I guess now as an adult, I can look back and go, you know, I'm not sending my kid to private school with those fees. So it's now I think, you know, it's, and now I still probably have a pressure a lot more of, you know, I want to continue to succeed to just feel like it was all worth it.
Yeah.
When you talked before about like living a bit of a double life, and was that a comfortable thing? Did you feel out of place when you first got to Sylvia Young's, or was it not really a class thing? It was more a talent thing, or how did that all feel?
Oh, it's a weird one. I think that there were certain moments that we had like speech classes at school, and the teacher absolutely hated me because I literally used to speak like this. I was so cockney. It was when I look back at like home videos of me, I say to my mum, why did you let me speak like that? So there were definitely moments where I would have, you know, felt uncomfortable, but I don't think as a young kid I was aware of class, and I don't think I was, to be honest, I don't know if I was even aware of it. You know, I go around to some of my closest friends' houses and they have massive houses and loads of money, and I just walked in like, you're right, like I just wasn't fazed by it all.
Do you think that's to do with your upbringing and your parents' outlook? Because it sounded like they were just like, let's just, you know, like they got a positive outlook.
Yeah, why can't you be there? Why can't you be, you know, part of this school? And that is the truth.
And did you grow up in a flat? You said you're on a council estate. Is that where you grew up, in a flat, was it?
Yeah, grew up in a flat. always lived in a flat. I now live in a house, which is really weird for me. Like buying a house, I was like, oh my God, I've got a garden. Like,
I know, it's mad.
And then I've never had a garden. And I'm like, yeah, I've got stairs.
I know. It's funny when people go, what do you want? I was like, I'd just love some stairs. I'd love an house. Yeah. I've lived in a flat my whole life. I'd love a flat. Some fucking stairs.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'll get you a stepladder for your birthday.
Yeah.
So how was, I know obviously you're at Sylvia's, how was, I can't imagine, I should imagine you were performing a lot, but were you academic? Did you find that was hard or how did you, how was school for you?
I loved school. I was in like top classes. I loved it. We had 3 days a week of academic classes and 2 days of what they call vocational. So like your drama, your singing, your dancing. And it actually felt like it was enough. I never felt like I was behind or needed to do like any extra classes or anything. But no, my academic didn't struggle, to be honest, even though we had sort of less time than, I guess, most schools. But I loved school, so I would really put the work in.
This is a conversation I think we should be having more, because When I used to teach a lot, I used to go into normal comprehensives. When I say normal, I mean non-performing art comprehensives. And we'd do like a Monday of like performing arts, a bit of drama for them. And ever since that school got that us group of teachers in teaching and doing dance and the kids having an outlet, their grades and concentration went up throughout the week.
Yeah, of course.
And there's a lot to be said with arts and giving the kids a bit of outlet to just release and emote. And
it's a release. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you think it's important that there is sort of arts and dancing and drama in schools? Do you think that will help and aid the sort of academia side of things?
I think so, because in my experience, there was no chance to be sort of complacent or bored, or because we had like 3 days a week, we had to like cram that work in. And then you knew at the end of the week, that's the way they did it on the Thursday and the Friday, you knew you had something exactly that there was less pressure, and you could, you know, let your hair down. And I mean, but I loved it. So maybe it shouldn't necessarily just be art. It could be more sport or just physical activity that can, you know, get your adrenaline going and your endorphins and all of that. Yeah. I think it is so important.
So you got into EastEnders 15, right?
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, that's so young. And yeah, also I'm at so that young. Time... EastEnders was huge, wasn't it? Not that it isn't now, but it was huge. It was like there wasn't as many channels. It was at a peak time, wasn't it, EastEnders? So you're like, it was stratospheric, the fame that happened for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was massive. There was no, back then, there was no reality TV. As you just said, there wasn't the channels that we have today. We were like the Love Island stars of today for the kids, sense. Yeah. And I remember I aired on the Friday. I think I was only in two scenes. And on the Saturday, I went to Primark with my mum, I think my auntie, and I was hounded, like overnight. It was overnight fame. And my mum says, I don't really remember it, but my mum says, I was like, I want to go home, and I wanted to get out there and get home straight away. Yeah. So it clearly affected me.
Had anyone sort of prepared you for it?
No. Looking back, no, there was, I might have had like a conversation with someone at EastEnders, but I don't really remember. But there wasn't the, back then you had no idea what was to come. And, you know, I was so young, and I still wanted to play out on my estate and go up the road to McDonald's and just do all these normal, what was just normal to me at 15. But my mum and dad were petrified, because all of a sudden they're, young baby, I was a baby still, was like catapulted into, it was like overnight fame. And we'd have like vans with like paparazzi sat in the estate. It was like, this is absolutely nuts. I think it was a very different time. I think if I'd have gone into the show now, like just now, it would have felt like another acting job, whereas back then it felt like this is life changing.
because it was pop star fame, weren't it, back then? Yeah, I remember it. And I remember you so clearly in it because, you know, I was obsessed with EastEnders growing up and stuff.
Me too.
But it's weird, isn't it? Because that first time you went in it, the first slot, obviously, you've been back in it recently.
Yeah.
But you were only in it for, correct me if I'm wrong, like 3 years, is it? 4 years?
Less, and then
you
left? That year and a half.
Yeah. So, but everyone still, like decades later, everyone remembers you from back then. That shows you how huge the show was back then. And that you were remembered. Because how long was the gap when you just went in it, Reese, back when you went back recently?
Like 16 years, something like that.
Yeah. And it felt like you'd never been away. Do you know what I mean? It's a mad thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I don't want to say it like, oh, what a terrible thing to have happened to me, because it wasn't. It was amazing. I was so lucky to get that job. Yeah. It changed my life. But looking back, it really affected me. I was just super aware in any social situation. Even now, like we'll go to, I don't know, a wedding or something with new people, and I get like social anxiety, and that is from being 15 and not being able to walk into a room. Whereas now, no one cares, you know. it's a different, but that stems from back then.
But also, when you're 15, the last thing you want to do is stick out. That's like that. You just want to, that's a big thing of being 15, isn't it? Fitting in, being amongst your friends, not having anything that particularly makes you different or unusual. Yeah. It's a very uncomfortable, anxious-making period of time in anyone's life.
Yeah.
And for that to happen overnight, how did the people on your estate react to it? Did they change towards you? What was the...
Not really, no. Like, my friends still stayed my friends. I mean, eventually it was great when we all got to 18. We'd get to go to all the nightclubs for free and, you know, like, we all ran off the perks. We milked it. We absolutely milked it for all it was worth. But no one really did. And even still now, because, like, my nan lives not on the estate but round the corner, so even if I'm walking through there now, I'll still have people saying, oh, how are you working, like, so you've had a baby, like, I felt really safe there, and that's why it's the place I would take you back to, because it's like my safe place, I guess.
Yeah, and it's amazing, isn't it? And also that it's still important to you to remember that, because it's very easy when you get famous and have success to sort of forget, or, you know, people have preconceived ideas that we might want to forget or run away from that place.
Yeah.
And when actually it's often the opposite, and you go back and go, oh, God, I feel like me again.
Yeah, it's home. Yeah, you feel like you again. It's home.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So what happened, I mean, obviously I know this, but after EastEnders, talk me through what happened, because you and I have spoken for many years, a decade almost, about the snobbery attached to being in a soap and how hard that is to make the transition beyond soap actor. Did you go directly straight on to Strictly after EastEnders, or that just offered to you?
Yeah, so I did Strictly and I absolutely loved it. It was the best thing I've ever done. I can't
you
tell
you. 16 then, right?
I just turned 17 on the show. Well, I was 17.
So young.
But it was amazing. It was, you know, it was, again, it was so, it's huge now, that show. And actually back then, I don't think it was as big. It was more fun. It wasn't the
pressure you get now.
It wasn't so intense. The pressure, the sort of, the attention that the contestants get now, you know, in the media and all stuff like that. I don't really think it was, I don't really remember. But again, I think because I was so young, I just took it all in my stride.
Yeah.
You know, like all of these things were just like, oh yeah, it was, I just saw the joy in it all. And then from there, I went straight into The Bill, which,
which
looking back, I mean, I was 18 at the time, so technically I could have been a police officer.
You did look really young in that police outfit. I was like, what is this child doing protecting?
I looked so young and I...
Google Louisa in The Bill because she literally does look like a child in a police uniform. So, and you still look young now. You still look about 19, 20 now. But yeah, you looked so young, didn't you?
I looked so young. When I left, because I decided to leave after a few years, they got me like a toy kids police car as my like leaving present.
And how was The Bill? Was that, because The Bill was really big as well back then, you know?
Yeah, it was the same thing. All these shows were bigger back then because we simply didn't have as many channels, so not as much was being made.
And
it was great. And again, I played like a young London, you know, basically in like a working class character. And I think from there is where I started to think, you've really got to be smart with what job you choose next, because, you know, The Bill at the time was, I know it's like a long running drama, but they had quite a lot of ex-soap actors at the time in the show that I was there. And that was quite apparent. And then I just found it really hard after that. I guess this is what you wanted me to talk about, because obviously I needed to work. You know, I was still living at
my mum's.
And you
can't go and work in a bar because everyone knows who you are, you'd get hounded. Like it's really tricky situation.
It was a really
weird
situation to be in. And I, you know, over the years I've had loads of other jobs. You know, I'm not proud. There's nothing for me, you know, I'm just a normal person that needs to get by and needs to work. But it's hard because you feel like you're being watched to see what opportunities or what jobs you take next. But so you can sort of break out of the box. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you love what you do and you just want to work. Yeah. So I have done jobs in the past that I don't know if it's helped or tarnished or if it, you know, what it's done career wise, but you've got to pay your bills.
Yeah.
And you've got to take the work, you know, where it comes.
I think a lot of people think when you're on telly, that's it. You've got like, you're a millionaire all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't work like that, because it's like, it's years. If you're not working for a whole year, that money's whittling down and whittling down. And if you have been without nothing before, the fear is always like, oh, fuck me, it's going to go, it's going to go. I have that fear constantly now. And I'm in a very privileged position and I'm very thankful. But I constantly worry about it running out. So you must have been the same. And Did you, you know, you were saying you weren't really aware of your class, obviously, when you're at Sylvia's and stuff. And did you start to become aware of your class when you were trying to get other jobs beyond the bill and stuff? Because yeah, you're saying 100%. I was getting a lot of working class characters. Yeah. And but I want to talk about that, the correlation between sort of doing a soap or like the bill, which is sort of like soap, isn't it? To doing these sort of fancy dramas and this sort of hierarchy and this sort of, oh, you know, the soaps are looked down upon, aren't they? And that is the truth because you have experienced that and you and I have had that conversation.
Yeah.
Where there is a snobbery attached, isn't there?
Well, I say there is. And sometimes I think I'm using it as an excuse.
No,
but to me, there is. And the only way I can like back it up is I have not been seen for a period drama in this country. I have worked since I was 15 years old.
Mm.
You know, I have not been seen for, there's so many things or so many casting directors that have not seen me in the 20 years that I've been going.
Because they think they know what you do.
Because they think they know what I do. They think they know my work, I guess. And sometimes I think, but you don't, because I've never been given the opportunity to show you anything different. Now, if I had left, sometimes, I think, if I had left EastEnders and I did all my interviews and I spoke really well and da-da-da-da-da, would I have been seen in a different light moving forward?
I think so. I don't know. What's your opinion on that, Hannah? Obviously, you're a director, so, you know, like...
Why are you not casting me, Hannah?
Mate, I talk like this. I'm not the person you need to persuade. I do think that's true. There's definitely a snobbery about soaps, but I don't think it's just about soaps. I think it's a bigger thing that we have in this country, and it like permeates all areas of our society. And we are so class, caught up in class. So we're deeply suspicious. Yeah. And I think, for example, I went for an artistic director's job when I was very young. And in the meeting, they asked me what I did. It was with a big board of... interviewers, and they asked me like, well, Hannah, like, you're still young yourself, like, what do you do when you want to relax? Like, you seem like really driven, what do you do when you want to relax? And I said, oh, well, I never miss the EastEnders omnibus, like, that's what I never miss. And they went, what do you really do? And I was like, oh, you don't think that I can be a theatre director and have come here and spoken to you about Shakespeare and Chekhov and, you know, and all of these different things I love, but you don't think that is possible to understand that work, love that work, have a passion for it, and also watch EastEnders. People don't think it's possible to be, for me, for example, like I directed one after another, Flashdance and then Mother Courage, which Laura was in. Just to be clear, Laura was in Mother Courage, not Flashdance.
I did come to see it.
I thought you saw Mother Courage, you did, yeah.
I just love the idea of you being in Flashdance, Laura, giving it the whole...
But you know I'd give it a go.
I'd love to do that.
I would literally love it. But honestly, people are so, so suspicious of that because it just doesn't fit in our box. And it's not just about art, is it? It's about everything that we think here. Like, you know, you're not supposed to want to go to have a Michelin star meal, but also not mind a KFC. People fucking hate it because it just doesn't fit. So I definitely think that was very long winded, but I think it's absolutely about soaps, but it's just so much part of everything. People just want people to stay in one place and not push boundaries but I think that is changing. I do think that's changing.
It is. I was just going to say, it is changing. And I've got a lot of friends that have managed to do it. So that's what I mean by, I don't want to sit here and sort of say, well, this is why I haven't done X, Y, and Z.
No, of course.
My experience, I do sometimes think, why haven't I been seen for that brunette role on my screen? That's, you know, I don't know if I am right, but I think the majority of people in my position would probably be saying the same. There are a handful, and especially now, of people that are breaking outside of the box and going on to do amazing, wonderful things. So hopefully that snobbery, if you want to call it that, is changing. Also, we work bloody hard. Like, the hardest I've ever worked is on a soap.
Yeah,
you know, the hours, the amount that you, the pages that you shoot in a day is like triple what I've done on other jobs.
I mean, obviously, that's a similar thing that I always find really weird, because people often say to me, "God, you've put a lot of musical theatre actors in plays, haven't you?" And I think, what does that even mean? That's such a weird thing to say for a start. But there is a real snobbery, again, like the theatre version of what you're talking about is like a snobbery towards musical theatre. And you think, well, why would that be? You've actually got to have a wider skill set for musical theatre than you have for, you know, a straight plays or whatever nonsense that means. But there is the only thing that you can sort of go... It is at the root of that is that it's popularist. It isn't about the skill set, because the skill set is wider. It's just about the fact that, like, average people enjoy it, and that something about that is then somehow less valuable.
Yeah, it's like,
than
it's like admitting you like reality telly, isn't it? If you sit and go, you know, I watched, you know, Married at First Sight or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
go, oh, really, do you? I'm like, yeah, I fucking do, and I love it, and what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
And then I'll go to a Pinter play next week. How'd you like that? Lou, do you feel like, I know now you've recently had a bubba and she's gorgeous and you're recently married and life's a bit calmer for you now, isn't it? And I know you've not long been out of EastEnders again. How did you find EastEnders second time round? How was that?
Yeah, it's just so different. You know, the first time I went in, as I said, we had, you know, like we had the matriarchs there. We had Barbara Windsor and Wendy
amazing.
Peters. Oh, it was, you know, it was, and I learned everything there. It was wonderful. I worked with Billy Murray, you know, every single day for a year and a half. And he was like my mentor in a way. So going back just felt really, again, I've already said this about my estate, but felt like going back home. Mm. It was just so nice to walk back in the building, and there were so many of the same faces. But I was an adult, you know. I've gone back. I've worked for all these years, and I've sort of come back, and I've got more life experience, so I can bring more to the show and bring more to the character and all of those things. And it is a different time now, isn't it? So it's. Again, it's a job. It didn't feel like there was no added pressures of all the other things that came with it last time around. It didn't feel like that this time around, which was really nice, because at this time in my life, exactly that, having a baby, you know, me and Ben were planning a wedding. I couldn't have imagined having that same like anxiety or social pressures that I had the first time around. So it worked quite well, actually.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I've got a few mates that had success very early on in their life, and now they're sort of having a bit more normality. And how is it that way round? Because I've just always just been like struggling to get up there, and I've sort of like my final latter 30s, you know, started to really make waves, and like, you know, it's just taken me that long. So I don't know what it would be like to have all that and then to sort of, yeah, I know it's peaks and troughs anyway, but it's like, is it a nice thing? Because you know what it was like and you're like, ooh, it's not so great as we make out. And
yeah, it's so weird. Like initially it was lovely to not have the pressure or the worry every single night when you got in bed of when am I next going to get a job? When am I going to get an audition? How am I going to pay for my rent? Because it was like, no, I'm having a baby. That's my sole purpose in life now. And I've managed to pretty much take a year off. Like she's a year old now and I'm slowly going back to work. And, you know, that is because I was in EastEnders just beforehand.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would never have been able to take a year off of work.
No.
So I'm fortunate. It's a different kind of pressure now. You know, now I have a child to look after. Now I can only take certain work because I don't want to be away and I don't want to be touring. And
it's good though. So it'll make you choosy, won't it? It'll make you go.
Yeah, it'll make me choosy. But also, I've got like more people to fend for.
I know.
You know, I've got to buy those nappies.
Yeah.
So it's a less selfish or less like self-centered way of like of putting pressure on yourself, I guess. Now it's about us as a family and what's going to work for us as a family moving forward. But life has definitely slowed down. It has to, you know. The, in the times where I'd have been sat there checking my emails every 10 minutes, I'm busy running after her. So it's helped, I guess.
It's a good leveler. Yeah,
of course
it is.
Yeah, of course it is. Nothing else matters now but her, you know.
Do you, I mean, obviously you've had loads of success. I know you'd be like, oh, I haven't really. You've had loads of success, you know. Anyone, so many actors would dream to be in EastEnders and The Bill and all the other brilliant things that you've done. Because you've had like, you've had that sort of privilege from quite early on. Do you still feel working class? Like, do you think it's something that you grow up with, that you're, you know, your parents are obviously working class? I guess what I'm trying to say is, now you've got so much privilege, or you've got money, or you're comfortable in a way, do you still have you always felt connected to your working class roots? Would you consider yourself working class?
Yeah, 100%, absolutely, through and through. You know, you could take me anywhere. You could take me to Hollywood. That's who I am. This is who I am, you know. This is what's grounded me. This is how I guess I have managed to sustain and keep going, because I'm grounded. I've got a lot of people around me that will always keep me in my place and, you know, make sure I don't sort of go off with the fairies and believe in the hype as such. And I honestly think that is why I'm still in the position I'm in. I never got involved with, you know, the wrong people or the wrong types of things or, you know, all the rest of it.
That can happen when you get fame very early on and it's too much.
And I never did. And I do think that I'm still really grounded because of where I'm from,
yeah,
you know.
And your parents
and the
as
people
well.
I've still, yeah. And my parents and the people that I've still got around me. And I guess the truth is, you always, like what you were saying about, like, you've got your money pot, say you do an amazing job, you know. I'm not going to go out there and spend that money like it's going to come in the next year. You sort of hold on for dear life because you think, oh my God, say I never work again. And all of those thoughts.
It's really real, Lou. We might not work again. You know, like, people go to me, you haven't stopped. I've just spent the last year out of work. I've done nearly a whole year out of work, and people go, you haven't stopped. And like, I've had a great couple of years, but it's like, it's not easy. It's four rungs up, two down. It's never straightforward unless you hit the big time and you carry on chasing it and whatever. But it's not like that. When you're a jobbing actor, it is up and down.
That's
up
what
and
we
down,
are.
Down. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think that's what, as you said, that's what gets like misconceived. That's where people get confused. It's not a ladder. It's not stepping stones. It is a whirlwind.
Yeah.
And I think, the reason I've managed to keep going is because I've had a few reality checks, I guess, along the way. And I guess it goes back to, I know how hard, you know, my mum and dad worked to get me here. So that's always what keeps me going.
And also it's a work ethic thing, isn't it, as well? I've always thought, you know, people sometimes say, why did you take that job or this job? And I'm like, well, that's the one that was offered to me and I have to pay my mortgage. Like, it's not to say, that's not to be disrespectful to the job or I'm not grateful for that opportunity. But it's only now, honestly, I've been a director since I was 21, which is, you know, equally a bit ludicrous. So I've been a director for like 20 years. It's only now that I suddenly go, now, do I want to career-wise do that? Or should I? But that's like really, really new. Like so, so new. Most of my career has just been like, thank God, just as we're about to drown, someone offered me a show. And that's why I said yes.
Yeah.
And I don't feel bad about that. I don't feel that makes the work any lesser. Or I just, it's my job.
Mm.
And that's the job I do. And if I didn't do that job, I'd have to do another job. Yeah. So that's why I do it, because I have to work. And
it's so funny, isn't it? Because in any other industry, no, you're not going up to that woman on reception going, why are you working on reception? Because you don't question anyone else in any other, really, walk of life.
Yeah, exactly.
You just don't do it.
Yeah.
So it comes with the job, though, doesn't it? Everyone can have sort of, like, pick at you, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many stories. My old comedy partner, Victoria Bush, she was in Bad Girls for years, as you both know. And
My favourite.
And she, when she came out of it, she struggled and she was working on reception at something. And she said to me, I'm really fucked, I need some money. And I went, listen, I'm working front of house at a theatre. They need some people. Do you want to come sell some ice creams? So she did. She's not work shy. As me, I'd do it. If everything ended tomorrow, I'm cleaning bogs. I'm not afraid of that. I am afraid of losing the money that I've worked hard for and the position I'm in. But I'm not also. I'm all a bit like, well, if it happens, it happens. I've coped before. But I remember she was selling ice creams and this woman recognised her and she was like, oh, you, I think her name was Tina from the kitchens of Bad Girls. And she said, were you in Bad Girls? And Vix went, oh, yeah, hi, can I get you something? She was like, what are you doing selling ice creams? You're on the wrong side of the stage, love. And it was just like, and it's fine because people don't understand because they think when you get a telly job, that's it, you're made.
That's it.
You're a millionaire and that's that. But it's not. If you don't work for 2 years or 3 years and the money's running, you know, and it's there. Of course, it's wonderful to have. It's not badly paid. It's not what I'm saying. But we have very lean times. So,
but those people who don't work, who haven't had to do that, again, it's another class. It's another form of classism, really, because that's because the majority of people who've got big roles in TV, film, theatre for a long, long time were people who already had money and didn't have to work. So, yes, you don't see those people in the co-op. You don't see those, but they didn't need to be in the co-op anyway. The more people who are breaking free from working class backgrounds, the more likely you're going to see someone. You know, we've all seen those horrible stories of like, so-and-so off this programme, I can't remember who it was. It was some dude who was in Grange Hill back in the day, poor fella. And he was working now, he was a kid actor, and now he owns a key-cutting business. Good for him. And people were like, what on earth has happened to him?
It's terrible. I hate that. I've always hated that when they do that.
To him. Bad, isn't He's it? A good man providing for his family.
Family, yeah.
So we finish up the show asking our guest if there's anyone that they would like to celebrate, a working class hero of theirs. If you could celebrate anyone today, who would that be for you, Lou?
It would be my dad. I mean, my mum will be really upset because she always says I'm a daddy's girl. So you too, mum. It would be my dad. He has got me where I was today. Like when I think back, he was working all hours, but would still manage to take me to all my auditions and make sure that I was, you know, always at school on time. And he's always been, both of them, I don't know why I'm saying my dad and not my mum, that's actually quite mean. They've just been so supportive throughout, while juggling jobs and, you know, God knows what to sort of push me through. And also, he's just like the nicest person on the planet, no matter what's sort of been thrown at us, you know, as a family. Or he's just the nicest, hardworking person.
What does your dad or did he do for a living?
He's an electrician. He's still an electrician now.
It's a good trade. He works being an electrician, isn't it?
It's a good trade. Yeah, he's a good trade. Yeah. But he just works so hard. And yeah, he does so much for us, even now as a family, you know, with the baby.
And so what's your dad's name?
Alan. Yeah.
So Louisa Litton, we are celebrating you as well as your dad, Alan. Alan Litton, I take it?
Yeah.
we're celebrating the two of you today. Babe, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you so much.
It's been so amazing. Thank you so much.
It's like a therapy session, isn't it?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, I'm chuffed that you two have finally met. I can't believe you haven't met already. A decade I've been mates with her, nearly.
I know. And I feel like maybe you're trying to keep us apart, Laura. Maybe you're scared that we'll like each other more than we like you. Suspicious. Oh, what a fantastic, fantastic woman. Loved her, obviously. I knew I would. I don't know. I just find that such a... I don't know what the right word is. It's almost like... heartwarming story that she's on her estate, she's 15 years old, she's like got this huge break, and yet, you know, she's still so utterly connected to where she comes from and
could have so
the people
easily,
she grew up with.
Yeah, and could have so easily been the opposite, couldn't it, with, you know, all that success so young. She could have easily gone off the rails and all of that.
Totally.
Because at the time, like we said, it was huge, it was massive, and you know, it's huge superstardom for her. And ever since I've known Lou, she's always been feet firmly on the ground. And, you know, it's very much to do with her family, but very much to do with her outlook and how important her roots are to her and how important it is that she stays connected with that. She's never, ever been show busy and above her station. That's why we gravitated towards each other. And I'm so glad that she got to talk, and I hope you found her story inspiring in some way. That's it for this week. Doing anything exciting this week now, Han?
Am I doing anything exciting? I'm off to do the school run and put my car in the garage. So rock and roll, listeners.
Lovely.
Rock and roll. How about you, Lor?
I'm just going to take the dog out for a walk, actually. He's pacing here. I think he needs a poo, so...
Oh, lovely. We'll leave you with that.
Always keeping it classy, as always. Join us next week, guys. Thanks for listening. And remember, keep it classy.
Proper Class podcast is produced by Michelle Farr-Scott for Rangabee Productions, edited by James Torrance, with music by Tommy Music. Please don't forget to like and subscribe. Spread the word. Tell your friends, neighbours, whoever will listen. We've also got an Instagram page. Ooh, get us. And you can follow all the news and goss at The Proper Class Podcast. And if you haven't nodded off yet, we've also gone and got ourselves an official email. So do get in touch. The email is properclasspodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, folks. And remember, keep it classy.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.